Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. And if you are a podcast listener, then it's safe to say that one of the genres that you have listened to at least once is true crime. That has been the leading genre in all of podcasting. Everyone is drawn to those stories. They're drawn to the details. They're drawn to the facts. They're drawn to how people would find themselves in these situations. And when it comes to the more graphic, sexually deviant crimes, those are the ones that even grab even more attention because of their lasciviousness. And it seems that the more extreme the case, the more attention it's going to get. And I really hope that that is the case for my guest this week. Mr. Doug Pfeiffer has spent 25 years as an Alaskan law enforcement officer, and he has taken his experience and his knowledge of various cases that he had dealt with and put them all into a book entitled 50 Shades of True Crime, which is an anthology of Alaskan-based sexually deviant crimes. And this has already gotten a lot of attention, a lot of notoriety. A lot of different people are looking Doug's way, and I'm really excited to not only hear Doug talk more about this book and about the development of the book, but also about what he has gone through as a law enforcement officer in Alaska for 25 years. We're going to have a great conversation. I'm really excited for you to hear it. And it is my pleasure to introduce my guest this week, Mr. Doug Pfeiffer. Doug, how are you, sir?
George, fantastic. I appreciate being here. Love to talk about the book. So thanks for having me.
And thank you for reaching out. This is yet another success story with Podmatch. I am just so thrilled to be a part of that Podmatch community. And it's been nothing but positivity for me ever since I've joined. And I think it's been almost 5 years since I started there, but it's been nothing but good things from the start. So definitely thank you, Alex, for putting this platform together.
Yeah, I think it's a great platform, especially for authors, because you got to kind of go out there, promote, sell your own book. So Podmatch is a great resource for authors and podcasters alike.
Absolutely. And speaking as both an author and a podcaster, this is definitely an ideal platform for me and hopefully for many others who are also into both podcasting and writing. So you get to reach out as both a host and a guest. But this is all about my guest this week. I'm really excited to have Doug here, and I am really excited. When I read the title, 50 Shades of True Crime, it was definitely one of those kinds of titles that would grab your attention, considering the 50 Shades element plus the true crime element. Talk about putting two great tastes that taste great together. And and so here we are. So tell us a little bit about 50 Shades of True Crime.
Yeah, you hit it spot on with the book title. It's a play off 50 Shades of Grey. What I did is over 25 years, I took the most extreme sexual deviant cases that I ever worked in law enforcement, and I put them into the book. So it follows that same sexual genre of 50 Shades of Grey. It's really hardcore. It comes from the bird's eye view of a cop. So nothing is left out of these stories. I mean, it's start to finish, as gruesome as it gets. I do say that it took me 6 publishers before they would publish the book because of the content. Not that it's too overly outrageous, but the problem was it's pretty savage in its content and direct. So they wanted to change it, wanted me to leave things out. But really, you would have lost the book if I would have done that. So I didn't want to do that. And finally, a 6th publisher said, let's do it. And we rolled with it. Extremely popular to date.
Now, this is a true crime type book, this whole anthology that you have here. Did you change any names for this, or did you just keep it all nonfiction as humanly possible?
Yeah, no, it's the real deal. So where there's somebody's arrested, there's a booking photo, things like that, the names and everything, public information I put in there. The names on some of these cases where there's family or children involved, I did switch to names. I tell the reader that in advance, because with social media, things like that, people can track anybody down.
Oh, yeah.
No need to re-victimize anybody else. I let the readers know. Most of it, though, is public information, technically. So if that's the case, I put it right in the book and you get the play-by-play.
And that's a really responsible way to do it. You're looking out for not only the story itself, making sure that that is coming across as true as possible, but it's just like what Dragnet always said right at the very beginning. Stories you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. And so that's what you're doing here. And I definitely applaud that.
I think that's the right way to go about it, especially serving my community for so long, being so heavily ingrained. Anchorage is a small town comparatively, so you pretty much know everybody. But this book, I wanted to do a little different twist on true crime. There's lots of books on serial killers, on crime sprees, things like that. There's not a lot on sexual deviancy that's real and hardcore and to the point. I came out with my first book. Additional books that follow will focus more on traditional true crime, like serial killers, things like that. But I really wanted to come out with something different for readers. And by the responses via email and my ratings, I think it's very, very different. But I think readers are enjoying it because it's so drastic from what you might normally read in true crime.
Do you suspect that other true crime podcasts might be taking some of these stories that you've grabbed to kind of dedicate specific episodes to this case or this case?
Yeah, what was interesting is I did a podcast a while back, and then I was contacted by a Hollywood production firm that wanted to actually make a docuseries out of the book and some other cases that I had in Alaska. So
wow,
that's still pending, but I think you're correct. The more you're on podcasts, the more you get these stories out. Certainly people are going to talk about them, discuss them, want to know more about them. I was always fascinated because these are extreme sexual cases, but the questions I get from readers via my website or wherever really dive into the details. They want to know more. Do I have additional pictures, interviews, things like that? Where I would think it's shocking, even as a seasoned cop, the public wants to know more and more information on those crimes.
Yeah, I am definitely excited to get a hold of this book so I can dive into it as well. We have true crime podcasts as not a constant in our rotation over here, but every now and then we'll just go ahead and bring some of them in. They are pretty fascinating. Once you start getting into it and everything, they really take you on a journey. And it sounds like you're doing the same thing in book form.
I tell people that after you read this book, you're never going to look at your neighbors the same way, your boss, or your best friend. It might change your perspective on what happens in everyday USA. While most of these cases happened in Alaska, they happen everywhere in the United States and the world. So I bring those to light. It's a little bit shocking at first, but the cases go lighter to heavier. I open up the book with a chapter called Name That Crime. What I do is I show a booking photo or a piece of evidence, and I give you three criminal statutes to pick from.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of guess what's associated.
Just kind of like a slasher movie, in a sense.
A little bit,
you get
yeah.
That. It's kind of like the first Friday the 13th. The first two deaths are just off screen more than anything. And then there's one throat being slit. And then it just builds and builds and builds till you finally have Mrs. Voorhees getting decapitated. So it's a very steady build. It sounds like you've been kind of following that same sort of template, which is great.
Yeah, Friday the 13th, you're going old school.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Got to go with what I grew up with. So one of the things I love to hear about is what I call the road to creativity. And that's that moment where you just realize that you are going to go in this whole other direction. You're seeing where you want to go. You're not there yet. But at the same time, like, oh, that's the kind of road I want to be on. That's the kind of person that I want to be like. That's the kind of energy. That's the kind of products that I want to make. That's the kind of things I want to do. Like what's so in your case, you went from you're a writer now, but beforehand that was you're in law enforcement for 25 years now. Is that correct?
Yep, 25 years.
So how did what led you into law enforcement in the first place?
Well, in Alaska, I mean, there's lots of jobs, commercial fishermen, which most of my family are. They're originate from Ketchikan. That's really hard work, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I decided perhaps I wasn't quite tough enough for that. So maybe pick law enforcement. Get a job that was interesting, always changing, has a little bit of an adrenaline rush. Alaskans like adrenaline, extreme sports, things like that, outdoors. So that always fascinated me a little bit. So in 96, I applied for the Anchorage Police Department, was luckily hired, and then did a 25-year career, mainly in the Anchorage area. Loved every minute of it. If I could only do one profession in my life, it would be law enforcement. I had the most joy out of that job, and I think it had the most impact on my life in my community. So I loved it. But then transitioning, I think cops are naturally good writers. Keep in mind, if you investigate a homicide or a serious crime, you have to document every single detail. Go into case reports, files, audio tapes, goes to a criminal trial. Very important to convict that individual of the crime. So you have to be very detailed lends its hand to writing. The reason why I chose sexual deviant crimes is because as I was in my career, either at home parties, office parties, just interacting with the public in a fun manner, they would always ask me, what's the weirdest, wildest case you ever had? And so I tell them maybe about a serial killer or a robbery, and they'd be like, no, what's something really, really wild and weird? And so then I get into the sexual deviant cases, and that's all they wanted to talk about. So that kind of put a light bulb in my head in my career. Mm-hmm. That, boy, once I retire, I think that the public would love a book based on sexual deviancy. So then I researched it to see if there's true crime books like this, and there just isn't. They're all over the map, but the deviancy crimes like I write about in this book, it's nothing else like it. So that's how it started. That's why I wanted to write it. And as soon as I retired, I wrote the book.
That's terrific. And I that's pretty much along the lines of what they always say, like sex sells. And there you go. That's a perfect example of that right there. So that's shocking that there were no other books like that.
Yeah, there just isn't. It's a tough subject to write about. And I mean, extreme cases and where you might not think the public's interested in these, they're highly interested because it's human psyche. You want to know the unknown. You want to know what happens next door in your community. So that's really what this book is about. It's everyday people that you may never guess commit these crimes.
And were these crimes happening during the time that you were on the job?
Yeah, most of these crimes I worked myself. So I detail from start to finish. Some of them were associated with training or other agencies that I may have been a part of, but most of them are all my cases.
Oh, wow. So you got a lot of, not only a lot of knowledge of all of this, but you also got a lot of memories. Was anything, did it feel like anything was maybe too traumatic to write about, or was it all just very, you just knew that you had to get this out?
Yeah, in the book, I leave out the like pedophilia, sexual assault. I leave those things out. The book, I mean, that's pretty extreme. It's hardcore for everyone. Oh, yeah. But I don't leave much else out. I mean, we're talking bestiality, necrophilia, autoerotic asphyxiation, all the things in there. That's all in there. That's quite an odd paraphilia. That's for your listeners, that's sex with corpses or dead people. Yeah. Always fascinating that an individual would seek that out as a, whether to commit a homicide to perform that act or find some place, whether it's a mortuary, a medical examiner's office to commit those acts. Always a little bit freaky for me to investigate. Never quite clear your head of that. It's just so strange. So that's one that kind of got me. I think cops, they deal with it all the time. So as long as you keep it in perspective, meaning that's your job, you got to work it, you got to solve the case. And then once you're off duty, you're back to a family man or whatever you do. So you have to keep a good perspective. And I think that keeps you healthy in life.
And it sounds like what you're doing here is almost like providing like a really good memory dump so that you can go ahead and go throughout your life.
Yeah, it was easy to write. I wrote the book in about 3 months. And the only reason is because these cases are ingrained in your mind. Like you just hit the replay button, and I could just write them all out. So from that aspect, it was very easy to write. But yeah, you remember all these cases, especially the extreme deviant ones, because they kind of lock in your memory. It's hard to forget them.
Oh, yeah. And how many cases total?
In the book, there's probably about 18 to 20 cases that I talk about. Mm-hmm. And again, we level up on the deviancy, meaning we start off a little bit softer and then really move up into hardcore deviancies, and some of which cost people their lives. I talk about homicidal necrophilia. Alaska is a unique place, although it's the largest and most beautiful state in the Union. It's also one of the most dangerous. Per capita, we have more serial killers than anywhere else on Earth.
Really? Wow. Is it just from the population standpoint?
Yeah, it's a small population, so about 750,000. But we also attract a lot of the deviant type behavior to Alaska because they think there's vast amount of land, which there is. Mm-hmm. They think that maybe the law enforcement may not be sophisticated, which it is. So I think those factors, and Alaska's are very independent. It's the land of the free. Come up, do what you want. You can't kill people.
Obviously.
But I think that draws a lot of these people that are on the fringe to come up thinking they can get away with crimes, ultimately committing them before they get arrested. So we draw a unique flavor up in Alaska.
Oh, man. It sounds even more fascinating. It's really, I don't want to say you created this world because the world is already there, but it's definitely eye-opening for a lot of people as well. Do you see this maybe going even further than this first book?
Yeah, I think the first book's been so popular that there'll probably be a spinoff with the second book, more related cases on the sexual deviant side, because the replies back to me have been overwhelming on what else you have, what other cases, are there similar cases? My readers even send me cases and said, have you thought about this? most of which I've seen or have actually had cases similar to that. So there's probably room for another book, 50 Shades style, mm-hmm. with that deviancy, because there's so much out there to talk about. The book covers can only cover so much. It has the bigs in it. So when you read it, it's going to be real eye opening. But I think down the road, there may be a second one.
So while you put the work in, you dedicate those 3 months to getting it all set up in book form, and you start shopping around. You mentioned before that you went through several different publishers before you found the one that was willing to take a shot at. What was that first meeting like with that first publisher?
Well, as every author, when you write a book and you think you write it well, and it's all scripted, you think it's perfect, you give it to the publisher, in your mind, they're just going to snatch it up and run with it and sell it. That's not the real world. It's not how it works. So I remember sending it off, and this had a management team. They actually had a Zoom call with me. They got on, they asked questions, and they're like, wow, this is really strong. We like the book, but it's very strong. We got to think about it. 3 or 4 weeks would pass. I'm like, what are they doing? They'd have another call. They'd run it up their chain. Eventually, they'd said, thank you, but no thank you. So kind of shocking, because it took so long, I figured they'd grab it. Then on and on, I went through five publishers before I found one. I almost thought about giving up, because nobody's going to publish this book. It's too it's too extravagant. They would publish it if I took certain sections, which I didn't want to do. And then finally, a sixth one I found, and they're like, yeah, this is a great book. Let's run with it. And it's done very well. And I don't want to throw your listeners off. It's not that extreme where you can't read it. It's just raw and savage from start to finish. And it gives 100% of the details. Nothing's left out of it. So I tell my listeners that listen to podcasts, if you think downloading porn's rough or doggy style's weird to you, this book's probably not for you. But if you're okay with those two things, I think the book will be just fine for you.
And it sounds like the way that they were kind of working it up the ladder is like they were waiting for someone to say no. But it just seemed like this person saying like, oh, wow, this is fascinating. Yeah, let's do this. Okay, let's send it up to their supervisor. It's like, yeah, this looks great. This has my vote. Oh, okay, let's try the next one. And it's almost like they're looking for someone to say no on that. And like, thankfully, you wound up getting a hold of this one publisher that decided to go for it. And yeah, so
it goes back to just keep pressing. And if you want to get your book out there, you'll get it out there, and you got to work hard. Being an author is a whole different business. You got to get yourself immersed into it, learn about it, promote yourself, such as this podcast. Nobody does it for you, even with a publisher. They do so much, but you really have to drive your own business and your own book. So I think that's critical to anybody that wants to be an author.
So the publisher says yes, you go through the process, the editing, and did they have any additional notes or anything to pare anything down?
Yeah, they did. That's probably a 3 to 5 month process. Mm-hmm. So they might take a chapter and say, give me a little more meat to this chapter, right? Put a little bit more in. They might take another chapter, say, take some of this out. But all in all, it was pretty flawless and easy process. I was pretty anal initially in my book, making sure it flowed correctly. And my wife helped me out a lot with it. I mean, she read it and be like, no, this sucks. This is good. She's very direct and honest, it was a pretty good product before they got it. But certainly 3 to 5 months of back and forth on minor changes and additions, which I think is normal for any author.
Excellent. So you go through that whole process. You go through the 3 to 5 months and everything. You got everything all set up the way you want. And then you finally have that moment. And that's that moment that every author is waiting for. And that's that moment where you get to hold that finished copy in your hands. What was that moment like for you?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I immediately followed up with a couple book signings in Alaska, Barnes & Noble, and sold out, had big crowds. And then the book got some social media following. My website blew up with emails. So all that's cool, because you actually get to interact with the readers asking you about these cases.
Yeah,
they appreciate the work that you wrote. They like reading the cases, which I think that's – sales are great, and I appreciate every one of them. But those interactions with readers and appreciating the book and liking the different unique twist on true crime.
Absolutely. And then what was that first signing like, getting to be at Barnes & Noble? You said that there was a packed crowd. So what was that sort of feeling, getting to speak about the book in front of them?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, you get to sign. I have a long line of people. True crime is a hot genre, as you said.
Definitely.
So everybody comes. Alaska had 8 months of winter, so we read a lot. So they got to stock up on those books for those cold nights. And I know the community very well. I worked there. I'd lived there my whole life. So had a huge support. I did signings in Juneau, which is our state capital, Anchorage, and then Fairbanks. So went very well. Had a ball. It's unique for an author to be able to do that, to reach readers one-on-one and personalize their books.
Have any true crime podcasts reached out to you to be interviewed?
A ton. I've had a couple from former FBI agents in different true crime genres that have had me on. In fact, the FBI one that I was on is how the Hollywood producers ended up contacting me about a book and maybe a docuseries with some Alaska crime in the future.
Oh, that's going to be so cool. And so with that in mind, like everything that you have going on right now with this, it's really taking off. It's getting a lot of attention. Have you heard at all from any of the publishers that passed on it?
I've heard from one publisher that passed on it. He was very kind. He actually ordered my book and sent me a little note. I thought that was nice. The others I've never heard from. So one out of the five I heard from, but I thought that's very professional on his part. Super nice guy. And that was one that was extremely close to taking the book. Absolutely. I think for second, third books, you put it out there, see who you have the best relationship with, and everything's on the table for sure.
Absolutely. And then with everything that you have, you were just saying before that there are definitely more stories in the works. So is the plan right now just kind of sitting back and mulling those over, doing a little bit of additional research on them?
The second book I already have detailed out and ready to roll. With the production company, what I did is I signed a temporary exclusive with them pending that. So that book's kind of on hold depending on the docuseries because they would own that material. It doesn't mean that a book couldn't come out after that. It certainly could, but I'll have to work that relationship out with them. So kind of a holding pattern and see if we get something on Hulu or Netflix or Discovery, which helps your brand and your books moving forward.
Not a bad thing at all. And those kinds of series too, that's ripe for content, you know, like on Hulu, especially like Netflix. I'm surprised they haven't already scooped it up with all their different true crime stuff that they have. But Hulu, I think, would do really well with it. Max would do really well with it, I think, because they have that Discovery element to them. So with that, I can definitely see them showing some interest in this, trying to get into the game and try to get a piece of what both Netflix and Hulu have been able to get so far.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'm hoping for it. We'll see how it works out. I'll let the producers and the experts handle that area. I'll be waiting in the wings to, if they put it together, I'll do it.
Absolutely. It sounds like so much fun. All that persistence paid off, and it's continuing to pay off. I'm really excited about what comes next for you. With that in mind, if you were to come across a writer that has either an idea for something or some form book, like they put in the work and actually put it together, what would you say if they were to ask you for any sort of like writing tips or publishing tips or anything to kind of get the book, their own book out there? What is one thing that you would recommend?
Yeah, I think it's an easy answer, and that is make your book unique. The reason being is there's over a million books put out a year, published, right? That's your competition. Think of that. Amazon has anywhere from 30 to 35 million books online that you compete with. It's a massive industry, we all know. So where authors think that they need to translate between all genres and everybody, it's just the opposite. So you have to focus on a niche. True crime is a niche, but I further focus on the sexual deviancy that really separates me from true crime writers. While you think it's counterintuitive because you have a lower audience, it's not. The audience that you target will buy your book and it'll be very popular. So that's what I would tell new authors is make sure that your book is detailed and unique to specific genre, like focus on one. Don't write it for everybody because then nobody's going to read your book.
That's a perfect button right there. Don't write it for everyone because nobody's going to read it. It's almost like you have to think of it as a reverse pyramid. You're right at the bottom. You are writing that book for yourself. You're right at the tip there. And so you cater to the people that are just above you, that small amount. And then if they like it, they're going to recommend it to other people. And then they're going to recommend it to other people. And then just builds and builds and builds in a reverse pyramid setting.
Yeah, I like that analogy. Makes sense.
Yeah. And where can my reading listeners find you on social media?
Yeah, my website's dougfeifer.com. That's dougfeifer.com. You can actually watch the book trailer, get a little audio clip of the book, see if you're interested. Also, there's some other articles on there for you. It's on ebook, paperback, hardcover, audio, whatever you like. On Amazon, of course, Barnes & Noble's, Bookshop, anywhere books are sold, you can find the book. So check it out. I answer every email that comes to my website. So if you have a question about it, want more information, I'll do my best to provide it.
Fantastic. Do not, under any circumstances, think that your book is going to be for everyone, because it's not. If you can get that small amount of people that are loyal, that are passionate about what it is that you have presented, then they're going to recommend it to others and so on. This has been a tremendous conversation. I'm excited for what Doug has in store for the future. And I'm excited for what you yourself have in the future. You got to write what you're passionate about, something that creates a great niche, something that goes in a direction that people don't expect, that the people have not gone in yet. grab those moments, those different people that are waiting for something similar to what it is that you want to write. They're there. They're waiting for your stories. And in times like these, your stories and your voices are needed now more than ever. So for Doug Pfeiffer, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to hesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@hesgotit.com.